The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We've arrived here in Edmond at the last day of the Philadelphia Youth Camp over the weekend. You might have heard some of the live commentary going on with the All-Star Sports festivities. That will continue, as I understand it, today with some of the softball games, and it may even preempt the noontime replay of the Trumpet Daily. So if you're needing to listen to it later in the day, you'll have to look up the schedule or listen to it online. We certainly make these available by way of podcast at kpcg.fm. And also, of course, they're available at the trumpet.com website, which is where most of our listeners come along and listen to these programs. I'd like to start today by quoting from Robert Morley's piece. This is at thetrumpet.com today, President Obama's plan to revamp discipline in schools. We talked about this a little bit last week, about the tweet that the White House sent out on July 22nd about the number of students that have been suspended in America or are suspended each year, and how it could fill 45 Super Bowl stadiums. And then it said, it's time to rethink discipline in our schools. That's the hashtag that the White House wants to spread. Rethink discipline. This is from Mr. Morley's article. He says, the United States President Barack Obama highlighted a troubling statistic. Almost 3.5 million students were suspended from school during 2001 to 2012. According to the Department of Education, another 3.5 million were suspended in school, meaning they were not sent home but were not allowed to go to class. And then he says a whopping 130,000 students were expelled. 130,000 during that time period. He says American education is in crisis. Our schools are in crisis. President Obama says the solution is to rethink discipline, especially when it comes to disciplining black students. According to the White House, black students are 3.5 times more likely to be suspended than white students. This disproportionality in suspensions is evidence of systematic racism within the educational system, it says. That's what the White House believes. And then Mr. Morley asked, but are teachers really, on average, racist? What about African-American teachers? And will President Obama's solution fix things? Well, we got into that, as I said, last week, and showed and talked about how that this is not going to solve the problem. There are problems in education, for sure. Many problems, in fact. But this will only make them worse, as we've already seen in some examples, like Minneapolis and St. Paul up in Minnesota. The school districts there found that black and Latino students were suspended more often than white and Asian students. And according to the Justice Department, there's evidence that the teachers in that region are racist, or at least unconsciously racist, Mr. Morley brings out. And so what did they do? Well, they decided to reduce the level of suspensions among blacks and Latinos to bring it even with whites and Asians. Mr. Morley writes, schools found to be disciplining black students disproportionately are often forced to adopt curriculum of Justice Department-approved Pacific Educational Group or similar organizations. So they're being forced to make these changes, and of course it's making problems worse in Minneapolis and St. Paul as far as student behavior goes. Says this is the group used by St. Paul schools to develop their curriculum. This organization, Mr. Morley draws attention to, the Pacific Educational Group, its founder, Glenn Singleton, his beliefs are, well, radical, to say the least. he draws attention to some of the beliefs of this group, according to the Competitive Enterprise Institute, that the achievement gap between black and white students can be explained by and only by racism. If there's any gap in achievement, it must be because of institutional racism. Another point this group brings out, the educational system in America is racist against minorities. Only whites can be racist. Even black and minority teachers are racist against black students because they've been co-opted into the white power structure. So even if you're a black teacher in these schools, you're affected by white racism as well, in this kind of a reverse way, I guess. It says the emphasis on individualism in schools as opposed to collectivism is a form of cultural racism. Defining one form of the English language as a standard or grammatically correct is racist. That too. Just teaching them to speak and to write a certain way, that's considered racist. Colorblindness is bad. And then finally here, the last point I'll draw attention to, this again is from Mr. Morley's article. He's just highlighting some of the beliefs of this Pacific educational group. I mean, this is the group that the St. Paul, Minnesota schools are relying upon to develop their curriculum. The last point, as I say, I'll draw attention to, parents are not a main factor in how well students do at school. Parents are not a factor. Parents really aren't a consideration. We're the educators. The government will educate you. The Department of Justice will see to it that you're educated the right way. This is a trend, really. I mean, even leaving aside this obsession with race, this trend in recent decades, it's been growing. Removing parents. Removing parents from the educational system. Of course, Satan's been behind this. He's been working diligently for generations, not only to expel the parents, but to convince the parents themselves that they're not educators, that they're not responsible for teaching or for disciplining their children. And most parents today believe that the schools are primarily responsible for this. The schools are responsible for educating. And then you read an article like Mr. Morley's at thetrumpet.com today, and you see where the schools are receiving their education and training. It's coming from these radical programs, like the Pacific Educational Group. Just look at the way education has changed dramatically over the past couple of generations. It's certainly gone way beyond teaching the basics of reading and writing and arithmetic. Now the schools are involved in just about everything when it comes to teaching America's youth. Let's look at a couple of scriptures here. Malachi chapter 4. Obviously, schools have their place. If you've listened to this program, we've talked about the youth program, the youth camp going on here in Edmond for the last 2.5 weeks. This church, KPCG, is definitely pro-education. And we have schools. We have schools on this campus for our young people. We have a grade school. We have a middle school, a high school. We have a college. Schools definitely have their place. But parents are the primary educators in every child's life, whether a parent wants to accept that responsibility or not. Parents are primarily responsible. And that has a lot to do with why this college, Armstrong College, here on this campus, why it's so successful in turning out young people, graduates, who are good citizens in the community, in the United States, who are building marriages and families that stay together, who are raising young people to continue on through this system, this program. It works as well as it does because of how well prepared these young people are, having been brought up in the way that they should go, like the proverb says, train up a child in the way that he should go. Teach him, in other words. Show him the way. They need an example. They need to see it from the father, from the mother. They need to see how marriage works. They need to see how to be successful, how to become a hard worker, how to be a young man or a young woman of faith. In Malachi 4, verse 5, it says, "Behold, I will send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Lord, and he shall turn the heart of the fathers to the children, and the heart of the children to their fathers, lest I come and smite the earth with a curse." How important is family instruction, family education? That's talking about utter destruction there. These last two verses in the book of Malachi, the last two verses in the Old Testament, talking about the importance of family, talking about parents turning to their children, and children turning to their parents. Let's notice Deuteronomy chapter 11, a couple more verses here, Deuteronomy 11. My father gave a lecture this past weekend to the young people at this youth camp, where he focused on these two verses, Malachi 4, 5, and 6. And he said, he told our young people, it's not enough for you to just stay with this message or to hold on to this truth. He said, using these two verses we just read to you, he said, we have to turn. You young people, you teenagers, you have to turn your heart to your parents. And God says to you parents, turn to your children. This is the true gospel message. This is the gospel of God. God's building a family. And that family is going to rule this world. And you look out at this world today, as we've discussed so often on this program, and you see the need for the God family. You see the need for God family rule. Deuteronomy 11. Let's just go through some of these verses here, this instruction that God gave to the parents in ancient Israel. It says in verse 1, "Therefore you shall love the Lord your God and keep his charge and his statutes and his judgments and his commandments always." God, as I say, instructing the parents. Israel had journeyed out of Egypt. God miraculously intervened to release them from captivity. They went into the wilderness for 40 years because of their sin, because of their rebellion, and then finally into the promised land. And this is all a type of our spiritual flight into God's kingdom. And so this is the charge that God gave to the Israelites anciently, 4,000 years ago or so. And it's the charge, it's the admonition that he gives to you. To love God, to keep his statutes, his judgments, his commandments, always. I mean, that's true education. Verse 2, it says, "And know you this day, for I speak not with your children, which have not known and which have not seen, and seen the chastisement of the Lord your God, his greatness, his mighty hand, and his stretched out arm." Moffat says, "Mark this day." The King James there, as we just read, "Know you this day." Remember this day. Remember this history. Remember the trials and the tests. Remember God's miraculous hand, his miraculous intervention. Verse 7, a little further down, it says, "But your eyes have seen all the great acts of the Lord which he did. Therefore shall you keep all the commandments which I command you this day, that you may be strong and go in and possess the land where you go to possess it." See, God wants us to be strong. And if we're going to be a strong nation, if we're going to be a strong church, we've got to have strong families. We've got to be family builders. There's no getting around it. No one can do it for you. You're responsible. You have to accept this charge, this admonition. Keep the commandments, God says. Down in verse 18, it says, "Therefore shall you lay up these my words in your heart and in your soul and bind them for a sign upon your hand." In other words, tie them to your hands like a knot to remind yourself of these truths, that they may be as frontlets between your eyes or like a badge on your forehead. Keep the commandments, God says, and don't forget these instructions. And look at what it says in verse 19, "And you shall teach them to your children, speaking of them when you sit in your house and when you walk by the way and when you lie down and when you rise up." That's pretty involved. That's quite a lot of instruction. God tells parents, teach them, train them. When you're together in the house, when you're walking out by the way, when you lie down or just before bedtime, in other words, and then when you get up in the morning. That's the way education is going to be carried out in the wonderful world tomorrow. Once the God family is ruling this earth, and everyone on earth is being instructed in the God family vision, everyone will be participating. Everyone will be doing their part. Verse 20 says, "And you shall write them upon the door posts of your house and upon your gates, that your days may be multiplied, and the days of your children, in the land which the Lord sware unto your fathers to give them, as the days of heaven upon the earth." See, that your days and the days of your children might be multiplied. Both, you see, are blessed, parents and children. Is it important to have a strong family? Well, if you don't, then everything breaks down, including the educational system. Mr. Morley quotes one school principal in his article who describes this new approach. Again, this new approach explained by this administration, enforced by the Department of Justice. He explains it this way: "We are asking our staff to change rather than expect kids to change." You see, it's the teachers that need to change. It's the teachers that need to be corrected. Now, that's not to say, teachers can't receive instruction and improve and get better as a teacher. I'm a teacher. I have to look at ways to improve all the time. But what he's talking about here is the approach, the focus. It's on correcting the teachers and not correcting the students. The students aren't expected to change. The teachers are. And they've got to comply with this new approach to bring justice into our school systems. You talk about an upside-down world. This is Isaiah 3. Just as God has prophesied, you rethink discipline, you remove discipline from the schools, you remove discipline so that the students can do whatever they want. And then, if you're going to apply discipline, you discipline the teachers for not teaching racial justice. You discipline the administrators. Discipline the parents. But certainly not the children. Is it any wonder that Isaiah says children are going to be our oppressors? That's what it says in Isaiah 3. To think that this is the approach in the United States of America, this nation that God meant to be an example, a good example to the world. And yet, as you heard there at the top of the hour, here we have a leader now that's going around the world calling on nations to accept homosexual marriage. As the president said in Kenya over the weekend, I believe in this principle of treating people equally under the law and that they are deserving of equal protection under the law, and that the state should not discriminate against people based on their sexual orientation. So he's going about the world with this message. And then the Kenyan president stands up and has to say, I disagree. This isn't an issue for us. We don't want same-sex marriage. What a world. Look at how the latter-day descendants of Israel have failed in this admonition to teach, to keep the commandments, to never forget them, to teach them to your children. As it is, we're rethinking discipline in the schools. We're carrying this radical agenda beyond our borders. Coming back to Mr. Morley's article, he says, a teacher's job is to do everything he can to help students gain the tools they need to be successful at life. Bringing national attention to the out-of-control behavioral problems in America's schools is a good thing. I mean, it is out of control. But why? Because of racial injustice? Is that why the behavior is out of control? Says the White House's solution to discipline problems and the widening achievement gap, which is to reduce discipline and blame racist white teachers and society, is guaranteed to make things worse. That's the truth. Let me read that again. The White House's solution to discipline problems and the widening achievement gap, which is to reduce discipline and blame racist white teachers and society. That is guaranteed to make things worse. Well, we have a lot at our website on these worsening relations. You remove the discipline, you blame the problems on injustices, whether real or perceived, and it's just going to set off quite an explosion. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show here on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial in Edmond, Oklahoma. The live stream, as you know, is available at kpcg.fm. Email us your feedback this week to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
In Principles of Living class here at Armstrong College, we spend quite a bit of time in Romans chapter 1, where Paul speaks about the material creation and how creation points to an obvious creator, the great creator God, who brought it all into existence. We show the students how there's quite a few people on this earth here in America that believe that God is creator. They stand up and fight for that concept. Of course, there's quite a few that argue against it, that disagree, that believe in evolution. Let's look at Psalm 19 in verse 1, because one of the points we make is that it's not enough to just believe that God is creator. Let's just consider those that faithfully believe that. Okay, if he's creator, well, what does that mean for you and your education and your family? As my father said to the youths this weekend, it's not enough to just have a truth. It's not enough to just have a fact. What are you doing with it? Is it turning your heart? Is it changing your ways? Psalm 19 in verse 1, it says, "The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament shows his handiwork." Yes, they do declare God's handiwork. There's proof of God's existence all over creation. As Paul said in Romans 1, the invisible things from the creation of the world are clearly seen. You can see it if your eyes are open to the truth. Verse 2, "Day unto day utters speech, and night unto night shows knowledge." It reveals a lot about God, his creation. We can glean a lot of knowledge from this creation about God. Verse 3, it says in the Revised Standard, "There's no speech, nor are there words. Their voice is not heard, yet their voice goes out through all the earth, and their words to the end of the world." Lots of instruction, lots of teaching, lots of knowledge. Notice verse 7. "The law of the eternal is perfect, converting the soul. The testimony of God is sure, making wise the simple." God's law is perfect. His doctrine, as it says there in the King James margin, is perfect. It converts the soul, or it restores the soul. We need it as the foundation of our education. This is true education. Verse 8 says, "The statutes of the Lord are right, rejoicing the heart. The commandment of the Lord is pure, enlightening the eyes." God is more than creator. He's the supreme source of knowledge. In The Missing Dimension in Sex, Herbert Armstrong said that the very first need of the first man and the first woman was to be given essential knowledge. And then he said that that's humanity's first need today. That's our first need, to be given essential knowledge from God. And that's what humanity has rejected. That's what our educational system has rejected. That's what so many parents reject. And yet this is the most essential knowledge there is. Continuing in Missing Dimension, Mr. Armstrong says, "And here enters a basic truth long ago forgotten by the world. The Almighty is not only the creator, he's also the great educator." And so, as I say, we go through this in Principles of Living here at the college. And as I bring out to the students, it's not enough to just accept God as creator. God is educator. He's a supreme source of knowledge. He's our teacher. And yet, if you look at education across America today, well, God's been expelled from the classroom. You're not to bring God into the classroom, not at all. You kick him out. And now the government tells us you don't even bring the parents into it. You kick them out too. And if there's problems in the classroom, it's the teacher's fault. The children, meanwhile, are just left to do whatever. The students the disciples. Look at John. Let's go over to the New Testament, John chapter 3. Where is this leading, this nation? What kind of future do we have when we're teaching our youths this kind of radical agenda in a classroom where God's been removed, where the parents have been removed, where the teachers are being scolded and disciplined? John chapter 3, the Gospel of John. Notice what it says here. In verse 1, there was a man of the Pharisees named Nicodemus, a ruler of the Jews. The same came to Jesus by night and said unto him, Rabbi, we know that you are a teacher come from God. For no man can do these miracles that you do except God be with him. We know you're a teacher. If you look at the Greek word there for teacher, it means master. I mean, you even look at the early American schools in early America. This was not uncommon to call your teacher master. They were the master. They were the authority. They were the disciplinarian. They maintained order and control in the classroom environment. They administered discipline. And they gave instruction. They passed along knowledge. How can you learn in an undisciplined environment? You can't. You need a master there. You need a teacher there who has authority. Most of all, you need God in the incredible human potential. Mr. Armstrong makes a similar point as he did in Missing Dimension. He says God is first of all creator, but he's also ruler and he's educator. So you accept God's existence, you believe that God is creator. Well, he's more than that. He rules. He rules his creation, and he's also educator. God didn't abandon Adam and Eve there in the Garden of Eden. They abandoned him. They left him. They left God and went their own way, and that's the way of this world ever since. That's the way of our modern system of education. That's why you can be immersed into a public school or into a university for 4, 6, 8 years and actually come away from that experience worse morally, spiritually. Oh, maybe you can get a slip of paper, a degree that will help you get a job somewhere. Even that's debatable these days. But we're certainly not educating our young people today in the basics of how to live. How to live. What did God say to Moses? What did Moses say to the Israelites? Keep the commandments of God. This is how you're going to maintain your strength. Don't forget these commands. Don't forget these teachings. And teach them to your children. This is how you're going to be blessed as a family, as a nation. If you let go of these truths, if you let go of these teachings, you will suffer. And Israel did suffer. They did. Your education and the education of your children, it depends on your total acceptance of God, not just as creator, but as ruler and educator, as master and educator. Look at Proverbs 1. I just want to show you again how this ties right in with learning. As I say, you can't separate the two. You want to rethink discipline, and by that, they mean remove discipline. then you're going to take away a lot of the learning and the instruction and the knowledge together with it. As I said last week, how can you expect even ones that are there for the right reason, because they want to learn, you're going to take away from their experience? Because just as they're finding in Minneapolis and St. Paul, you remove the discipline, and, well, there's just going to be mayhem in the classroom. Proverbs 1, in verse 7, it says, "The fear of the eternal is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction." Now, that word fear means reverence. Reverence. We're so far removed from this in schools today. I know you know this. I mean, you read the Bible, just basic scriptures, and it's almost shocking to you to hear it, to hear the truth, to get God's perspective, to understand what God says about education. God, after all, is educator, right? He is. And he says the fear of God is the beginning of knowledge. This is where education starts. It starts with a fear or a reverence to God. That's what that word means. So you can see why it's so important for parents, as it says in Deuteronomy 11, to get it right in the home, in the marriage. Because when those little infants come along, you are responsible. You are responsible. It's not like it is in the animal kingdom, where a little baby calf comes out and just by instinct, well, for one, they start walking right away. And by instinct, they know where to go to get their milk. There's no parental responsibility there. But in the home, in a human family, it's totally different. God intended for those little ones to be totally dependent on you as a parent, as a father, as a mother, from the very beginning. To just reinforce this point of how important it is for you to educate. How important is it for us to educate those youths, those children? Society will tell you there's no need for the father, of course. He can be removed from the equation right away. And then with respect to the mother or the material needs, it's just physical things, basically. You know, food, shelter, toys, clothes, that kind of thing. But certainly nothing in the form of education, moral or ethical education, training, teaching. The schools will take care of all of that. The schools will teach your children sex education. The schools will teach your children about what's fair, about what's just, and what's injustice. And there is an agenda there in the schools. That's true, that's for sure. Look, Satan is a great educator as well. So what are you going to do? You're going to just turn your child over to Satan's system? The influences are all around. No child, not even ones brought up in the very best atmosphere at home, can be completely sheltered from these influences. But what will you do as a parent? Will you be faithful? Will you be diligent? Teaching them by the way? Teaching them when they get up? Teaching them when they go to bed? That's what God says we should do. Even in a relatively good environment, like they had initially there in ancient Israel, coming into the promised land, God gave them that land. God separated them according to their tribe. Outside influences were minimal. And still, God said to the parents, now you remember where you came from, what happened, that history. And above all, teach the commandments of God and teach them to your children. If they were to be that diligent, that earnest in their teaching of young people, then what about today? I mean, here we are in the very last days. Jesus said it's like the days right before the flood in Noah's time. He compared it to the days of Sodom and Gomorrah. That's what we're in right now. And so we better be on guard as parents. We better be vigilant. We better protect. We better educate. How can a child that's never been taught to listen or to sit still or to look to the master, the teacher, how's that 6-7-year-old child going to then go into a classroom and sit there quietly and listen and learn? That's just an example from the very earliest year of school. What we're reading about now, mayhem in the classrooms, violence, constant noise, distractions, rebellious spirits. What an environment. And we expect our young people, our teenagers, to learn in this kind of environment. And then now the Department of Justice comes in and says, well, you know what we need to do? We just need to rethink discipline and start phasing out suspensions and expulsions. We need to phase those things out. I mean, even those things are unjust because minorities are suspended or expelled more than the others. And so it's all wrong. Let's just remove discipline altogether. Oh, what a nightmare. What a disaster this will be. Matthew chapter 11, a couple more verses here before we conclude. Matthew 11. The approach today is that principle brought out. We're asking our staff to change rather than expecting the kids to change. Rather than expecting the kids to learn and to overcome and to grow and to make changes and to make improvements and to be better as a person, to understand their place, to learn their role. Well, you remove any form of discipline in the school, and then what happens when they graduate later and they go out into society? And what happens when they start to complain that they don't have enough freedom? They don't have enough freedom to roam, to move freely, quote unquote. Well, maybe we need to look at law enforcement. Maybe we should rethink the discipline there. Well, we're already doing that, aren't we? This goes beyond education, as I was saying last week. This is about removing law and order from society. That's what it's an attack on. Law and order. Get God out of the classroom. Get him out of the government institutions. Get him out of America. We've got an agenda here. Never mind what God says about human behavior. Never mind what he says about fairness, about justice, about law. Never mind what he says about same-sex marriage. Certainly not. Oh, well, who cares what God thinks? He's been expelled, you see. Matthew 11 and verse 25, it says, at that time, Jesus answered and said, I thank you, O Father, Lord of heaven and earth, because you have hid these things from the wise and prudent and have revealed them unto babes. These truths of God, they're hidden from the wise and prudent, or from the, it says in another translation, the sophisticated and the cunning. the sophisticated, the educated of our society, they don't know these basic truths. Common sense, it should be. But it's very uncommon, isn't it? Proverbs 1 and verse 7, you read verses like that, as I said, and it comes as a shock. Because we're so far removed from truth. We're so far removed from God. We're so far removed from the teachings of the Bible. And we are paying dearly for that anti-God radical agenda that you see everywhere in society. Ephesians chapter 6, just so you can see here, this is not just Old Testament, Deuteronomy, the Proverbs, and so on. Look at what Paul said about the family, about education in the home. This is Ephesians chapter 6, the epistle that Paul wrote to the brethren at Ephesus there in the first century. Notice what he says here. We'll start in verse 1. It says, "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right." Obey your parents in the Lord. Now, when you look at that organization that the St. Paul School District is basing its new teachings on, its new standards of conduct on, the Pacific Educational Group, headed up by this radical, do you think there's anything in there about teaching children to obey their parents? Teaching children to obey the teacher? There should be, but there isn't. God's been booted out of the classroom, remember? He's been expelled. Verse 2 says, "Honor your father and your mother, which is the first commandment with promise." Honor them. That's not old-fashioned. It's not out of date. These aren't some, you know, arcane sayings of the Bible that no longer apply. You can stop applying them at your own risk. God made you to be a free moral agent. You do have to choose. You have to decide. You have to turn. It's not enough just to have the truth or hear the truth. Are you turning? Are you turning to God? God sent a man in this end time, coming in the spirit and power of the Elijah of old. And he did turn the heart of the fathers to the children and the heart of the children to their fathers. He did do that. He raised up these many youth programs that we have here to this day. We have him to thank for that. And above all, we have the God that he feared to thank for that. And so many, even in that church, raised up by Herbert W. Armstrong, have since turned away from this family vision. Honor your father and your mother. This is the first commandment with promise. Verse 3 in Ephesians 6 here says that it may be well with you and you may live long on the earth. What a blessing! What a blessing family life is and should be for every young person. As I look at our incoming freshmen every year, 70, 80, 90% of them coming from such strong families. In many cases, I know their parents. They've been married for many years. They themselves, like me and my wife, we've been brought up in this truth, trained in the way we should go. That doesn't mean we've done everything perfectly. We've made our mistakes. But we try to uphold these teachings, these truths of Ephesians 6, verses 1 through 4, these truths, Proverbs 1 and verse 7, Malachi 4, 5 and 6, and on it goes. Deuteronomy 11, Deuteronomy 6. Family. That's what it gets down to. Fear and obedience. That's where children learn it first. In the family, in the household. That's where education begins. That's where it all begins. Starts there and it leads you right into the family of God. What a wonderful blessing God's system of education is. It's family education. That's what it's all about. Here at Armstrong College, young people are brought in from all over the world to be taught how to live. That's what it all boils down to. And they can put that wonderful way of life into practice here as a student, as a single, as a God-fearing single, a disciple, then later a graduate, then later as a married, then later as a father, as a mother. When God will tell them, okay, here's what you've received, here's what you've learned, here's what you've experienced. These are the trials and the tests that you've worked your way through along the way. Now, your children are going to come along brand new. They won't know all this history. They haven't gone through those experiences. And you are responsible for teaching them. Teach the commandments. Teach them diligently. Bring them up in the way that they should go. Prepare them for school. Prepare them for youth camp. Prepare them for God's college. Prepare them for the family of God. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial in Edmond, Oklahoma. The live stream is available at kpcg.fm. Thank you for listening today, and we'll see you again tomorrow.